with Clement Maniatella.
7:02.
23 minutes after 10 o'clock, we start the conversation right now with Jody Scholtz, who is the commissioner at the National Lotteries Commission. Thank you so much for making time for us, Jody. Good morning.
Good morning, Clement, and good morning to your listeners.
I want us to start off with just the basics. If you can help us understand what the mandate of the National Lotteries Commission is, but also what your responsibilities are as the only commissioner.
Great, thank you. So the National Lotteries Commission effectively has three functions. We regulate, we advise, and we distribute. In terms of the regulatory function that we are the only regulator for the National Lottery and Sports Boards license. So in terms of the Act, the Minister grants one license at a time to an operator to run the National Lottery. We then regulate the functions of that operator. We also advise the Minister around anything to do with lotteries, sports balls, as well as promote and raise awareness about the National Lottery. Under that, we have things around player protection, the harmful effects of gambling. Judging from the arising out of the regulation of the National Lottery, we get a portion, a proceed of each lottery ticket comes to the National Lotteries Distribution Trust Fund. We then use that for good causes. We then have four areas, sports and recreation, arts, culture, natural and national heritage, and then charities and miscellaneous. Those are the four sectors that we operate in. Mm-hmm. So we get NPOs to apply to us for funding, and we then take these proceeds from the lottery ticket sales, and we then distribute this via mechanism into these NPOs. So that's in a nutshell, kind of what the NLC does. Mm-hmm. What I do is I'm responsible for the administrative, the financial, as well as the operational workings of the National Lotteries Commission.
Okay, so how much money are we talking about here? The distribution trust fund.
Annually, we get around 1.4 billion rand.
1.4 billion rand. Okay. We'll talk more about the applications that often come from NPOs and the kind of controversies that we've seen. You are celebrating 25 years of existence as the regulator of the lotteries and sports. What are you able to, as a reflection, you've been able to do well, you think the National Lotteries has been able to do well over the last 25 years, and what's in it for the National Lotteries over the next 25 years, especially given where it finds itself right now?
I think one of the things is that we've been able to continue distributing funds to worthy good causes. And we see, I'm really grateful. Every day I get to meet South Africans from all walks of life doing really amazing things in communities, servicing protecting vulnerable individuals. We're talking about the aged, orphans and vulnerable children, people with chronic illnesses, also involved in arts. So we get to see and experience NPOs, NGOs, working with the Lotteries Commission to implement their mandate. So I think going forward, just in terms of where we are, one of the things that the board has mandated me to do is to look at different funding models. We get 1.4 billion, and yes, it is quite a nice pile of money, but how can you do more with that? And the only way you can do that is through collaborative partnerships. And so it's exploring some funding models, looking at partnerships, and then also getting a lot closer to our communities that we actually need to serve. Mm-hmm. I think also, just where we are right now, a big focus internally has to be on people and people development. And so those are kind of the medium to long-term strategic objectives that we have set for ourselves.
Yeah. So you spoke about the worthy causes where NPOs apply for funding. And I'm sure there have been worthy causes. As you say, you've met people that have been impacted by the National Lotteries Commission. But there have also been people that have misappropriated funds that are meant for those worthy causes. And I remember the SIU saying that the National Lotteries Commission is a criminal enterprise. Is that an exaggeration, or that's how bad things are? How widespread is that criminal network at the commission?
Difficult one, Clement. I think it is quite widespread. What we found is that there was a network of individuals internally. So some we've been able to suspend. They've you know, subsequently as you proceed to the disciplinary process, they've resigned. So the SIU would do an investigation. If any staff member is implicated, they would give me a referral, and then obviously we then take them through the disciplinary process. So the our response to this has been that in terms of our funding, there are two opportunities for funding. The one is the application-based, so we'll announce a call and we'll tell everybody to apply under those various sectors that I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. And the second one was the old proactive funding, which we've now renamed into research-based funding. So when the Act was amended, it allowed for this research-based funding opportunities to emerge, which is intended as a vehicle to assist quickly. For example, in emergencies, if there's a flood, can we then quickly realign our funding mm-hmm. to then support that those victims whose homes have been decimated by the flood, for instance. Mm. And so we've had to put in a number of measures to assist us to stem that tide. So our systems is, you know, one of the key things is capturing ID numbers. Something as basic as capturing an ID number yeah. wasn't there. So, you know,
ID numbers for who?
For the applicants, for the
NPOs.
For the NPOs, uh-huh. yes, and who their directors are.
You don't capture their ID number?
You know, something as basic as that.
Yeah.
You know, and so the entire ecosystem was focused around fraud. I mean, when I just joined, I remember the risk practitioners coming to say to me to give them access to the system. And one of the questions I asked them was, so how did you do your job if you didn't have access to the system? Mm. They said, no, people will bring me bits of paper. I said, well, there is your first risk that you don't have, you don't have access to the system to do a, you know, to apply your professional judgment, for instance. Mm. And so we've had to look at the entire ecosystem of how we fund grants in order to look and see to, you know, how we can best address the fraud and corruption, particularly emerging from the SIU's reports.
Yeah. We'll continue this conversation after the latest in Eyewitness News headlines. We're in conversation with the National Lotteries Commissioner. We've got Jordi Skaltz, who is the commissioner at the organization. If you've got some inputs, you've got some questions around how the National Lotteries Commission operates, 011-883-0702. You can send your WhatsApps on 072-702-1702.
702. The Clement Maniatela Show.
Let's walk the talk.
It's 25 minutes before 11 o'clock. We're in conversation with Jordi Skaltz, who's the commissioner at the National Lotteries Commission. I'll go to your calls in a moment on 011-883-0702 or your WhatsApps on 072-702-1702. So something we picked up, Jordi, is through this kind of criminal enterprise, it looks like some people who worked at the National Lotteries together with some lawyers would also pick like people in high profile positions, celebrities, to sort of, I would imagine, send applications as NPOs for the funding. But then that money would be siphoned and used for other things, buying properties. And thank goodness the SIBU has done an incredible job in following the money to attach those vehicles, to attach those houses that were bought by money that was intended for those worthy causes you were talking about earlier. Have you been able to see the extent of the impact? Like, where does this corruption leave the intended beneficiaries that are struggling? Because there are people who are still waiting for sports facilities. There are people who are still waiting to benefit from the money that's coming from the National Lotteries, but that money was used to buy cars and vehicles. Have you been in touch with some of the intended beneficiaries who were clearly, their details were used to make the applications, but they never benefited?
Absolutely. I think when I joined, that was one of the first things that I did, just going to get a sense of what's actually happened. And I recall I'd gone to a NEDLAC meeting, and there's civil society there, and I'd gone alone. And people actually came up to me and started shouting at me, where's my money? Mm. You've stolen the money. And then I thought, my goodness, what have I just walked into? So, yes, I think communities are justifiably angry. And this forms part of our reparation process that we are going to embark on very shortly. It's taken us a while, I think, internally to get all of the mechanisms in place for that. But yes, there is a process of us actually going to the 19 facilities that I'm aware of that the SIU has gotten on their books. Mm-hmm. So it's a sports field. It's a drug rehab center. It should have been an old age job. In some instances, the facilities are there, not quite up to standard. And so we need to go out and look. So the SIU have appointed quantity surveyors to go out and actually do an assessment for us. We can't do that ourselves. It would be wasteful expenditure. And so we're waiting on those reports, and then we'd be able to sit with these communities and see how we can actually repurpose these facilities.
Is there an option to do lifestyle audits for employees and board members to avoid a similar thing from happening again?
Absolutely. So what we did is we started with an integrity test. Mm-hmm. 336 colleagues internally, about 5% declined. Our integrity test pointed out that we had about 56% internally, measured about 8 dimensions, mm-hmm. maintaining confidentiality, general honesty. Would you steal from your workplace? Would you collude with a service provider? Would you collude with a beneficiary? Any conflict of interest? And have you taken a bribe or a kickback? So we assessed colleagues on those dimensions internally. That then gave us a very good risk profile of where the risk areas internally lie. We've then used that as the precursor for our lifestyle audits. So we've just kicked off. The board approved that, I think, around mid-March, a lifestyle audit policy. Mm-hmm. The executive team have done that. I think the chief audit executive, poor Vincent, has been busy the whole Easter weekend to get that done so that we can then roll this out to the rest of the organization. So that's happening as we speak.
That's good to know, so that the history doesn't repeat itself. Some WhatsApp voice notes are coming on 072-702-1702. I'm going to ask you to please put on your headphones, just right there next to you, so we can hear the calls and the WhatsApps.
Morning, Mr. Capacity Manyatela. This is Lucky the Black Angel. I just want to find out if you can ask the commissioner there for me. Why is it that the NLC wants new NPOs or registered NGOs to provide them with active banking details when the company is still new or the organization is still new? Because, I mean, at the bank, they give you a reserve bank account. So it becomes active once there's an agreement with the funding organization. So I don't know if that's still the case or not. Thank you.
Thank you for your question. Is that an expectation to bring in that you have to provide an active banking details?
Clement, so we've included a range of new compliance measures. Mm. Some of those include NPOs that have to issue us with the SARS tax clearance certificate. Mm. They need to give us the bank details. They need to give us the IDs, the signatories. Because what we found is that this is how NPOs got hijacked, is that you and I would have an NPO and then somebody comes along, takes our details off, puts their details, and then when the money is paid out, the money is paid out to them. So we've got verification checks so we've introduced pre-inspection site visits, as well as our monitoring and evaluation, which happens now on all projects. Before, it was on a sample basis. Only 20% of the projects would go for monitoring and evaluation, and there was no site visits done. So
so you're giving money to people you don't even know if
absolutely
the address exists.
The SIU says we've paid for a borehole off the West Coast. You know, so it's somewhere in the ocean, it's a borehole.
Oh my goodness.
So it's that. So with this pre-site visits, we are able now to verify that yes, it is a bona fide project, or no, actually, then nothing exists. Mm. And so if nothing exists, we then start the process not to process that.
Yeah. So, I mean, clearly there have been some governance failures here. There are governance measures that have not been implemented. I mean, if you're monitoring 20% of the projects, that's a huge risk you're taking. You know, people can really just benefit and put in addresses that don't even exist because you're not also checking and monitoring those projects. Are there people that have been held accountable who were supposed to implement these rigorous measures to avoid the National Lotteries Commission from losing money? Are there people whose responsibility it was to ensure that money is spent for worthy causes who have failed to do that, who are now no longer at the National Lotteries Commission?
Absolutely, yes. That's part of the drive that the board has implemented for us to hold people accountable.
Mm. How many people have you dismissed?
Well, we haven't dismissed anybody because as we get to the DC process, people resign. So there's been about 6.
Who've resigned?
Yeah, who've resigned because we've placed them on suspension, produced all of the investigative reports, and we then have a DC process. And then, you know, once people look at the charges, they still want to put their case forward. But then I think as it nears the end, people then just resign. And so, you know.
Do you have an estimation as the organization of how much money in corruption you have lost? As the NPA, I remember SIU putting up a number of about 1.4 billion rand. That's what they estimated.
Yes.
Is that similar to your estimation?
Yes, that's similar to our estimations, yes.
That really is an incredible amount of money. Okay, 011-883-0702. The WhatsApp's on 072-702-1702. I'll go to more of your questions and your calls after the latest.
702.
The Clement Manyathela Show.
Let's walk the talk.
We're in conversation this morning with Jody Scholes, who is the commissioner at the National Lotteries Commission. I got a message here, Jody, from someone who wanted to know. I mean, it's a very funny question, but I've seen it a lot, and I would want you to maybe just clear the air around the lotto numbers. And I know
this. I don't have them.
Yeah. Listen, I would have made sure you give them to me first before you give them to the listeners. And obviously, there's a difference between the National Lotteries Commission. There's also a difference between Ituba as the operator. And you can explain that difference. There's a listener who wanted to know here that are the lotto numbers randomly drawn or are they pre-selected? And I'm asking that because I want to ask as the regulator how confident you are in the auditing processes that are involved in verifying winners so that you don't have these doubts in people who have been playing lotto for a very long time or are interested to do it, but are constantly asking themselves, are these winners really legit or are there questions here around the auditing processes? How do you satisfy yourself?
Thank you. So the lottery numbers are randomly drawn. There's a random number generator that generates all of these numbers. The National Lottery system itself conforms to ISO standards in terms of ICT systems.
Mm-hmm.
They also have to be part of the World Lottery Association in terms of being an operator.
Mm-hmm.
So we are the regulator. So we go and we do checks on them. We look at all of the reports. We assess these reports. And we then also go out and visit terminals where we... our education and awareness, our reach. We actively, you know, encourage people to write to us and complain.
Mm-hmm.
If they think there's any funny business, they write to us. We have a unit who goes and investigates all of these, who looks at these. Unfortunately, we've also found that people have been trying to, you know, indicate that they are a lottery winner when in fact they've rigged their tickets. And the systems are able to pick that up.
Okay.
So I think for me, you know, that's a really great thing, is that our systems are robust. So anybody who says, I mean, you know, everybody asks me, do you have the lottery numbers? I don't even know what they're going to be. You know, it's a random process.
Yeah. And we've seen technological advances in the gaming industry and the proliferation of even online retailers. Has that impacted on the auditing processes or how the national lotteries is, and how that gaming is conducted? This advancement in technology, how has it impacted your work as the regulator?
It has. And so what we are looking at is international standards. We bring in international bodies who can assist us to help us. If we feel that there's areas in which we need assistance, we bring in these international experts.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the lotteries, we've also been able to see a marked increase in South Africans being offered opportunities to participate in foreign lotteries. And so there's a fine print that most players wouldn't read, is that they're not playing on that foreign lottery. They are betting on the outcome of that lottery. That's the first thing. The second thing is you can only participate in a foreign lottery if you actually are in that country at the time that lottery is being generated. And so, you know, we're seeing a lot of this kind of online scams is having an impact on the South African public.
Okay, so the digital platforms are safe to play. As the regulator, you can assure people who probably have been feeling, I'm going to do the usual way of going to buy the ticket and doing the crosses, and they're very wary of the digital platforms. You assure them that that's safe to play.
Absolutely. And there's a range of checks and balances. Yeah. I mean, with the online banking, you can play through your banking app. Mm. I think this is some of the advances that the operator Ituba has put in place.
Wonderful. Let's go to Tsepo, who is calling us from Mamelodi. Tsepo, good morning.
Oh, hi, hi, Clement, how are you?
Sharp, man, what's your question?
Look, my question is, I work for an NPO in Mamelodi, for example, and I don't want to say the name because, obviously, I don't want to get discriminated against, but we put in our application now 10 months ago, and usually it takes about 4 or 5 months for them to adjudicate, but we've heard nothing since. And why would it take 10 months? What's going on? Is it a process as well? What's happening?
Okay, so you have applied, what, 5 months ago, ne?
10.
10 months ago.
10 months ago, we've heard nothing. No, we don't even know if our application has gone through or if it's been adjudicated. But we've heard nothing from them, and all they said was, "Look at social media." I mean, how does that work? Yeah. Even in their process, they say it takes up to maybe 5 months, but now it's been 10.
Okay, great question there, Tsepo. Thanks for calling, Jody. What's the turnaround time?
Tsepo is correct, Clement. We do have a backlog. It's incredibly frustrating right now. Given the process improvements that we've had to put in place, it's been a bit of a, it hasn't been a smooth ride. It's been a bit of a stop and start. Mm-hmm. We are at the point now where we've been able to capture all of the applications. So the process is, Tsepo should have been contacted. Somebody should have visited him to verify his project. Mm-hmm. It then comes back to the National Lotteries Commission. And we are engaging with the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition to recruit more distributing agency members, because they're the only ones who can adjudicate applications. And so currently we have 4 members who perform these functions, and they've been working extended hours on weekends to help us minimize the backlog. And so we have been in touch with the DTIC to get us more distributing agency members.
Okay. Glenn, you are calling us from Morningside. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead.
Hi, Clement. Hi, Commissioner. My name is Glenn Wallman, and I'm calling from the Angel Network. We run a non-profit that was started 8 years ago, receiving no government funding whatsoever, relying purely on donations. And I was wondering how we could go about applying for funding.
Okay. Thank you. Line in Morningside.
Thank you, Glenn, for that question. We are at the point where we'd be introducing our new call. Mm-hmm. We're hoping to probably do that around about July. The challenge, we normally, you know, put the call out in about April. The reason for the delay is we're wanting to automate. And so we're wanting to bring in a new system where beneficiaries like the Angel Network could then apply online, upload all of their documents, and then submit it to us. So we're going to use the periods from about now, from April to about the end of May, end of June, to encourage beneficiaries then to start using our system, uploading the documents, so that when we issue the call, people can then just click the button and it's sent to us. Because what we found is that the rejection rate for NPOs is incredibly high. So we've received about 5,304 applications, over 4,800 additional applications have been rejected. And so for me, we need to get those applications compliant. Okay. And it's rejected for a range of, you know, minor compliance.
What's the criteria? What do you look at?
So, you know, you need to have your 3 bank signatories, you need to have your SARS, your BE certificate. All of those compliance documents need to be in place. Mm. And in some instances, the signatories don't match. And so we need to go back. And we also then do the project verification.
Okay. You've mentioned that there are people that when they started going through their disciplinary hearings, they then resigned from the organization. What do you do as the National Lotteries Commissioner, as the employer under those circumstances? Do you open a case against them, or do you let them go and what, they're scot-free now?
So some of those have been as a result of the SIU's investigation, and the SIU would then open those cases. Where we've done the investigation, we open those cases. We've also joined the South African Fraud Prevention Services, and they've got a database of individuals. And so we would also then, by virtue of our membership, upload those names to that database so that anybody, if you're wanting to employ somebody, you go and have a look there. And if you see somebody's name up there, you know, those are some of the red flags. Also, we've been in touch with the SIU, where individuals belong to professional memberships or professional associations. We then write to those associations to say, you know, Jody's had a hand in the cookie jar. Here's the report. Please investigate your member.
Okay, but as it stands now, you don't have employees who are involved in the investigations by the SIU who are still actively at work, do you? Or do you have those that are going through disciplinary processes? Some of them have resigned. So all those that have been mentioned by the SOU or in the various investigations, are there any of them that are actively at work now?
No, they're not. Some of them are still on suspension. I think there's about four still on suspension. But the rest that the SIU have given us, as soon as we get that referral by the SIU, we move very swiftly.
Okay. There's someone who wanted to ask about the social responsibility program in respect of lotteries. Can you maybe speak to us about that? Because I would imagine a part of your role as the commission is to advise the minister on establishing and implementing that social responsibility program.
So the social responsibility program is in fact the National Lotteries Distribution Trust Fund. It's intended for those four sectors: charities, arts, culture, natural and natural heritages, and sports and recreation and miscellaneous. So as the National Lotteries Commission, we don't have a CSI budget, as it were. But because all of our funding is intended for socioeconomic needs and development, that is then used for those purposes.
Okay. And then another person wanted to ask about the issue of capacity. What are the plans to increase? I know you mentioned you've started a conversation with the Trade and Industry Minister to help with the monitoring and making sure that, because you said four people who are responsible, they go through the applications. So what are the plans to just capacitate the organization more? Are you relying solely on that assistance from the Trade and Industry Department? Or what else are you doing as the commission to try and make sure there's enough capacity so that you deal with that backlog?
So what we're doing is we are looking at bringing in a system. We've revised all our business processes and we've optimized those, and now we're going to automate that. We've been able also to cut down a lot of process inefficiencies. You know, so I handle an application form, but it maybe passes through my hands six or seven times as part of a broader process. We've been able to streamline that process, and those are the processes that we're currently automating. In terms of the actual capacity, so the provincial offices would go out and help the beneficiaries or our grantees complete the application forms, get that ready for adjudication. And so the intention as well is we're building in some deep machine learning capabilities into the systems so that the machines can also help us, you know, reach our decisions a lot quicker.
Okay. I wanted to ask now about the impact that the scandals we've seen at the commission, the impact of that on people playing the lottery. Do you think that has deterred people from playing the lottery? Do you find that people still have a lot of confidence in the lottery itself, but also in the National Lotteries Commission? What's been the impact of all these controversies we've seen over the last couple of years?
So people are still playing the National Lottery. We are still adjudicating funds, albeit a bit of a slower pace because of all of these, you know, process and systems changes that we've had to make. I think the biggest challenge is there's been an internal impact in the Lotteries Commission, is that some people weren't aware about the detail of this. And so now their morale is also affected by this. And so I think it's a bit of a mix. So we're still seeing people are playing the lottery, and I think the operator is doing a very good job in terms of also publicizing the winners. Part of our commitment to transparency is that we also publish the beneficiaries in each of the areas. And so we're trying to also automate that, put it on a bit of a digital map. And so you can actually click on a district level to see who's won the lottery, how many ticket sales, and where we're trying to load the data now is on actual beneficiaries that we've supported in a particular area. Mm. And we intend to publish that.
How do you deal with the confidentiality of the winners? When you say you'll know in a district that this is the person who's won, do you like indicate who, like Clement in Joburg in this area?
No.
Yeah.
That's managed by the operator.
Uh-huh.
And so they would just indicate Clement in Sandton has won a lottery, and we would able to also pinpoint the retailer where the ticket was bought.
Okay. There was a question about the NPOs that have been flagged by the SIU. Someone said the SIU said a criminal syndicate involving more than 1,000 non-profit organizations and non-profit companies is under investigation for being given these irregular grant contracts from the NLC. Have these NPOs been blacklisted by the commission?
So we have a delinquency process, and we've had to revise the policy. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, they go on our delinquency register. In some instances, and I was having this discussion last week with our chief risk officer, and, you know, Molemo is busy categorizing this because, you know, sometimes you have a beneficiary who doesn't understand the compliance requirements. And that's an opportunity for us to go out and educate that beneficiary about what you should do with the funding. So, for instance, they may have used the money, you know, for a school to buy bread, but then they would also buy bread for their home.
Mm.
And so it's those things. So it's not, you know, and so we're trying to understand what are these various categories of delinquency. Mm-hmm. The board, and particularly our Audit and Risk Committee, has also been quite firm, is that we actually need to take them through a rehabilitation process.
Okay.
If it's fraud and corruption, it gets dealt with differently and in terms of the laws of the country. But if it's around, you know, non-compliance, inadvertently non-complying, then there would be a separate process for that.
Are you seeing a difference since you've implemented this, the range of compliance measures and these internal controls? What kind of difference are you seeing?
So we're seeing, you know, that the people have still been trying to defraud the lottery system, and our systems have been able to pick that up.
Mm.
So in a few areas, we already know that there's some hot spots. And so when those applications come in, so we've spent quite a bit of time educating the provincial managers around fraud and corruption measures. These are some of the things that they should be looking out for. And so they, as soon as they find anything that they think is slightly irregular, they would then refer that for an investigation, and we're then able to investigate and then either confirm or, you know, say, no, it's a bona fide application.
Okay. And maybe the last question is around, do you have specific causes that you tend to fund as the NLC?
Yes. So under the research-based funding, we are looking at food security. It's a big, focus, as well as gender-based violence and femicide. And so those are the two big areas. I think there are some other areas that, you know, still are in the pipeline around youth as and youth employment in particular. I'm still working with a few stakeholders and entities for us to put a comprehensive proposal together to take that to the board for them to approve it. But the board has approved food security and then GBVEF.
Okay, what's there to look forward to at the NLC?
You know, it's been a very interesting year. I must admit that, you know, I've witnessed enormous dedication by the team internally. I've also been very lucky to be able to bring in some new colleagues internally to assist in this transformation.
Yeah.
And going forward, I think it's a revised or revived NLC, one that is a bit more tech, using tech as an enabler, but also a very strong focus on communities and doing actual real socioeconomic development rather than just lip service as had been in the past. But, you know, I think internally the team is ready. They're geared to go. I think there's some training opportunities we need to look at as we go through the new system and we embed our modernization drive.
Mm-hmm.
There are going to be opportunities for individuals. And so we've been talking about these opportunities because some jobs are going to be changing.
Mm-hmm.
Because people would be applying online versus coming in. And so how can we ensure that everybody is still committed and is able to make a difference? So I think those are the key focus areas for us going forward.
All right. Jordi Skoltz, thank you so much for making time for us. She's a commissioner at the National Lotteries Commission. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.